Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Oh, it's my turn. Sorry. Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for tuning in. I brain fart there. good morning. It's the middle of November. Excuse me. Holy.
It's cold.
Holy shnikes. It's the middle of November.
No, next week.
Next week is Thanksgiving. It's an early Thanksgiving this year.
Yes. Unfathomable to me. I can't even handle it.
You know, right before the show started, we were looking at Beck's calendar that she writes down, you know, what guest is going to be what day and everything. And I'm looking, and next Saturday is the 24th, and it hits me that Christmas is like a month and a week away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bizarre concept to me that it's that close already. It snuck up on everyone.
Well, it kind of hit me a couple of weeks back when I started seeing the commercials on TV.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that really starts to kind of set it in. If you haven't gone out to the store and seen all the dynamic Christmas dressings that they put out back on Halloween. But I haven't been anywhere to see it, so I had a little shut in watch the commercials.
For me, it's been all week. I've actually been listening. I know I'm a sick individual saying this. I've been listening to Christmas music at work.
Are they playing it on WNIC now?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, they have been.
For those of you who are not from this area, WNIC has been playing Christmas carols starting around November 1st for a good 20 years.
Yeah, they play it all the way through till Christmas. You know, they'll start like the first week of November, and that's their entire programming. I think they started a little late this year, actually, because I checked it out on November 1st, and they were playing their regular soft rock. So,
well, at any rate, I'm not ready for it, so.
Well, it's one of the only things that helps get me there for the Christmas mood, so. And I enjoy Christmas music.
I do too on Christmas Day.
Yeah, well, I, you know, I'm minded a little bit differently with the whole music thing. So,
yes,
you know, neener. But, so I've been in between that and the random snow that's been falling in the Detroit area here and there. It's kind of put me in my happy place. I actually am one of those sick individuals that enjoys cold weather and enjoys looking at snow, not so much being out in it, you know, but
I like looking at it, but I'm not. You and I are polar opposites when it comes to this topic. I would rather just pack up and move to Arizona and stay there the rest of my life. If I don't have to see another flake of snow, I'll be just fine.
No, I'm good with the snow, because I'll tell you know what snow doesn't have in it? Scorpions. You know what Arizona has in it? Scorpions.
Well, yeah, if you're a jackass and you're wandering around where there's scorpions. You know, I mean, there's ways to avoid it.
Not really. All right, enough of this. This will be a discussion that we'll table for another time.
Yeah, really.
Apparently, we have to hash out our feelings about Arizona. But anyway, we are very, very happy to have the guest today that we have on today. I'm having an awesome powers moment there.
That was rough.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Our guest is a very special guest for our show.
We met her via social media. She's got a really great social media presence. She's very helpful to other people. She's very quick to tell her own story, hoping that it will help others. And she's very giving of her time. And, you know, I know that everybody online appreciates it so much. So,
yeah,
you know, I was drawn to her strength and her perseverance. I couldn't help it. And she has, like I said, bravely put herself out there to help others.
Yep. She's just very, very sweet, sweet person. And we are so very happy to have her on the show today. Please welcome to the show Ms. Aubrey Good.
Hello, everybody. That was such a sweet introduction. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we rambled a little bit, but sorry about that.
Yeah, it's because, you know, if we get the opportunity, we'll talk about you for a half hour before you get a word in edgewise. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It was funny, though. I was like, I don't know. Sometimes, like, maybe that's part of being bipolar, I guess. You, like, overthink things, you know? And so, like, mm-hmm. the last 3 days, I'm like, you have to wake up on time. You have to wake up on time. And my husband's like, this is the time you wake up for work anyway. I wake up at 7, or like 6:37 for work. And I'm like, right, but, like, this is the weekend, you know? I woke up at, like, 5, and then I woke up at 6, and then I woke up at 6:15, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to make it.
Yeah, that's the thing. When, you know, your head goes to a different space when it's the weekend, you know? It's like for me, like, I get up, and my alarm goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning, and somewhere in that 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock hour, I'm in various states of trying to get up so that I can actually make it to work by like 5:30, 6 o'clock. And that's where my mindset is 5 days of the week, 4 days of the week. But Saturday hits and all you want to do is sleep. And the last thing you want to do is get up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can definitely appreciate what you went through this morning with having to get up. Cause you know, you're on the West Coast, so you're talking a 3-hour difference there. Mm-hmm. And that's – thank you.
No. I'm actually a – I call myself a recovering insomniac.
Okay.
I have had insomnia for – and I'm not joking. I've actually had insomnia since I was probably in middle school. I mean, I've had it as long as I can remember, where I would go to sleep about 3 or 4 a.m. and then wake up for school at 6 or 7 and whatever time it was, and then I'd come home, nap for a couple hours, and repeat the cycle. And then maybe like on my Saturday off or whatever, I might sleep like 12 to 16 hours straight. And I did this all through my early adult years. That's actually how my husband and I kind of connected, because he was deployed in Afghanistan, and he would be waking up, or I would be going. Wait, let me think about this. He was 11 hours ahead in Afghanistan, and, you know, I would have insomnia. So I'd get done work. I was a bartender, so I'd get home at, like, 4 a.m., and he would be ready to Skype because it would be his afternoon, and he'd be like, why are you still up? And I'd be like, I got to go to work in 5 hours. But so anyway, now that I'm, you know, the last year or so I've been in treatment and this and that, I think it's since January, since I started my job at International Bipolar Foundation, I was like, oh, no, I need a normal schedule, like a normal sleep schedule. So I've actually had to retrain my body to feel tired when it sees the darkness instead of feeling energized, because I guess my circadian rhythm is off.
So,
it's been, you know, it doesn't sound, maybe it does sound difficult. I don't know, but it is very difficult because the nighttime comes and I'm ready to, I'm like, yeah, let's go do stuff. My husband's like, that's not normal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, usually so. it's the, hey, the sun's up, let's go work. And, you know, nighttime comes, it's like, okay, I'm ready to pass out. And yeah, no.
Yeah.
So by the way, if you could, next time you talk to your husband, please tell him thank you from us for his service.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I will. Yeah, that's really nice of you.
Yeah, that's kind of a near and dear to our hearts kind of thing. You know, Beck's dad was a Navy guy, and my uncle actually fought in World War II. He was actually during, you know, and the D-Day invasion, and that kind of hits home for me.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Yeah, it was. Remember when Saving Private Ryan came out? They had that opening scene from D-Day where they're invading.
Yeah.
The first time I saw that movie with my dad looked over at me and said, you know, your uncle went through that. And I didn't know that before that moment, and that just stuck with me.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really interesting. I get a lot of people who ask me, like, how do you live the life that you do? They're like, it's so chaotic and counterproductive to bipolar treatment.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when my husband leaves for, like, 8 to 9 months at a time, and then, you know, he's back, and then he leaves again December 1st, and then he gets back just in time for us to go home for to Pennsylvania for Christmas, and then after that, we don't know what's going to happen with him. So he could be leaving for a year to go to training, you know. So they're just like, how do you do that? How do you stay stable? And I think what I had to do is just become very independent of him and kind of like form my own schedule, my own routine, you know. And so when he left on deployment back in February, it was like he wasn't really gone because I was still doing the same stuff every day. Like I had a routine down. I had my dog. The only thing missing was really like his physical presence. But, you know, that's just kind of how you have to get through it, because I feel like if I was too dependent on him, then I would be all sorts of chaotic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I would do if Joe had. I mean, we've been apart. The most, I think, was 4 days.
Four or five days.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
and
you know.
We haven't been apart other than that. And I would find it very difficult to watch him go away for months at a time. So you are a much more courageous person than I am.
Well, you know, I think I've just been, like, groomed to be like that. You know, my dad's been in prison since I was 13. So ever since then, I think I've just gotten used to long distance relationships that are very important to me. It's actually funny because I kind of prefer, like, I'm actually okay with the long distance, and my husband's like, thanks, and I'm like, well, and I try to explain to him, I'm like a cat, like, I love you, but I don't want to be around you all the time until I'm hungry or want like affection, and then I go back to my corner, you know. So
we're both much more like, you know, retriever dogs. We're all up in each other's face, like, oh, I love you, pay attention to me now, you know.
Yeah,
it's not dating for some people.
Yeah, yeah, we cause vomit wherever we go.
I just don't, you know, like, for me, I'm like, whatever works for you. I always get upset when, like, I meet other military wives and they'll say, ugh, this woman said her husband went away for 2 nights and she was so sad. And I'm like, what do you care though? Like, it's all relative, you know. If she misses her husband in 2 nights, that's very sweet. Like, some people need that. Some people's relationships are set up that way. Me, I don't know. Maybe I'm evil. I don't know. But cats are kind of evil, right?
I can remember a time when I was on Facebook. It's been a while now, but I was on Facebook and I just wrote, I miss my husband, and I sent it, and the next thing you know, I'm getting all these, well, where is he, and all this, you know, oh my God, what happened to him, and I'm just like, he's at work. So I felt really
so
stupid
sweet.
After that.
He's fine. He's alive. He's probably driving a truck right now. I don't know. Just he's not sitting next to me. So.
Yeah, well, to be fair, when John is home, I am, like, clingy. Like, he's on leave right now, so most people would let their husbands just be and, like, do their, like, guy things or whatever. I don't know. Whatever that means. But I'm
yeah,
like,
we have our guy things.
Yeah, I'm like, so you're going to be my intern for the next 3 weeks, right? Like, you're going to work for me for free, please? And he's like, I guess. You know, so I'm like, but I need to see you always. Like, I need to know what you're doing.
Is he in the room right now?
No, I'm sitting outside because it's supposed to be the cold air.
Oh, that's right.
But he's actually doing dishes. He's phenomenal because he does, like, he cleans and cooks and, like, he is a godsend because I can't manage all of that. That was the hardest part about him being gone is, like, I am honed in professionally, like, at work. I am super organized. I am super motivated, blah, blah, blah. But at the home, you know, like in most people who would say, I'd never know you have bipolar disorder. If they walked into my apartment and my husband's not living there, it looks like a bomb went off. I mean, it really, like, I cannot stay organized. I never have. Like, even when I lived at home with my mom, you know, she'd go downstairs and there'd be like 14 piles of laundry and things everywhere. And so he really, like, he is my rock when it comes to, yeah, helping me at home. And when he's here, it's easier for me to do it. But I think domestic duties just really overwhelm me. I don't know why. It's the weirdest thing. I walk through my house door and it's like over. Can't do anything.
I can appreciate that. Yeah, we should probably get to our questions though.
Yeah, well, hey, that's a good idea. Having a good conversation.
We are having a good conversation. Good. It's nice. It's like hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she was a little bit nervous, so I thought maybe if we yacked a little bit, she'd be less nervous.
Oh, good thinking. I married a smart cookie.
Yes, you
How
did.
How do you feel?
Oh, I feel good. Yeah,
it's
good. This is fun.
Are you all bundled up in your 53 degree weather?
No, I mean in like my fleece pants and then a t-shirt.
Uh huh. Yeah, you are. Yeah, it's tough in San Diego.
Meanwhile, we're running into the electric blankets and the portable heater.
You can hear the heater going in the background and. You know, we got cats passed out on heated blankets.
To be fair, the house is extremely poorly insulated.
Yeah. There is that. But, you know, the 30-degree weather outside doesn't help with that either.
No.
Well, let's see if we can get some questions going here. You've talked a little bit about your situation and your past and whatnot, but the first question that we usually ask the people that we have on the show is, where does your mental health journey begin?
Yes.
I think I've always just been aware of it to some extent. My grandmother was a therapist, and so it was kind of a family joke. She'd run around and, like, I think you have ADD, I think you have OCD, I think you have da-da-da, like, you know, and so she was constantly monitoring all 25 or so of her grandkids in her own, you know, she had six children herself. So it's something, I mean, when I was very, very little, probably nine, I hit puberty very early, and I was having a bunch of changes, and she was like, okay, I think you have depression, or you're showing signs. So I was always kind of aware, like, of therapy and what medication was. But it was about 13, after my dad got arrested, that the bipolar symptoms started to show, I guess, from my understanding now, in adolescence, bipolar disorder shows up differently. It doesn't quite look how it does in adult form. So I got misdiagnosed with depression and was on Zoloft, which literally made me go crazy. Like, I was having manic episodes for months on it to years. So finally I got off the Zoloft, I think when I was 16 or 17, and I was like, I'm done. You know, I don't want anything with the psychiatry. I'm fine. I'll figure it out on my own.
Yeah.
From there, I was pretty good. I was like an ace, you know, pretty honed in, but, at that point, I just couldn't handle, like, the hypersexual symptoms. I couldn't handle, like, extreme stress. I had a lot of problems with emotions. Like, I'm either very emotional or I'm completely stoic. So, almost, like, apathetic.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was problematic with friendships because people are like, I don't understand why all of a sudden it's, like, talking to a stone. And then I just started to drink heavily, and I started to party, and I kind of let all of my goals, like, I just didn't go to college, I let all of my goals go out the window. It was just about having a good time, you know, which is kind of unfortunate, because I think I'm a pretty smart woman, and I think I have a lot of talent, and it would have been nice to see me do something with that in my formative years.
Yeah.
Now I'm 27 and you know, about 2.5 years into treatment, about a year and a half into serious treatment, and I feel like I am completely lost. Like, I'm like, oh, what am I going to do with my life?
I get that.
I get it, too. I for sure have that conversation with myself all the time, and, you know, once in a while, you just have to kind of sit back and realize, okay, I'm probably going to be on some medication of some sort for the rest of my life. So I need to figure out a way to be okay with that so I can move forward. And to me, it's difficult. It's difficult, but that's one of the easier parts of depression is realizing the medication standpoint of it all, that you do have to be medicated. You know, I'm a person who happens to believe that you're never cured of it. It's like, you know, being an addict. You're always an addict.
Right.
You're just, you know, an addict that's in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel the same way about bipolar disorder. I don't know if I'm going to get any flack for that, but that's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's, you know, it can look so different in people. And I mean, I guess where I get, you know, such a headache from is I guess to finish my mental health journey around, so 2016 with the election, I had been working with Syrian refugees. My whole goal in life was to work in the UN with refugees, Middle Eastern. I was taking Arabic classes. I was doing all this stuff with the refugees, and then the election happened, and I just happened to be very against Trump, and part of that had to do with, since he's been elected, he kind of depleted the whole refugee program. You know, I mean, literally depleted it. And then we've been pulling out of different, like, UN groups and this and that and the other thing. So I just kind of saw my career go in flames. So what happened was I think my bipolar started to ramp up, where I'm a very passionate person. I'm a very opinionated person. But when I'm, like, in a irritable state, like a hypomanic, I guess, state, I get – to be one of those zealots who's like screaming at people online, like, you're wrong, how could you think this way? Like, and so I became one of those people that I despise now, who like instantly, like, oh, you like Trump, you're Nazi. Like, so, and that's not really me, you know? So, like, so, because now, like, if you see my mind, I'm like, can everybody just shut up and get along? Like, that's like kind of how I really am, but, so anyway, so I started to realize, like, I would see red, like, I would get so mad when they commented something, and I would be staring at my husband going, do they not understand? That's not even factual, that doesn't make sense, blah, 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 and I would just lose it. And if I did not comment back, or, like, if it was a verbal conversation, I mean, I would, like, explode. So at that point, I was dropping out of school because I was in over my head with the refugee thing, and my life was kind of crumbling around. So I just kind of looked at him and I was like, I think I need to go, like, get help because this isn't normal. The problem was, at the time, though, and even now, that's still normal behavior. If you go online, it's full of people or, like, you know, your uncle or whatever online, like, oh, I hate these people, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, simmer down, Uncle Ted, like, but So my problem with my bipolar disorder is it always kind of mimics, like, extreme behaviors and, like, the normal populace. So people don't necessarily think, oh, maybe Aubrey's not right or, like, not doing well. They kind of think, oh, she's one of them.
Right.
So, I mean, I just decided I had to get help because it was just, like, I was, you know, driving myself insane over people's opinions. Like, I remember one time, one of my friends was very sarcastic, and he goes, are you really going to argue my opinion right now? And I'm like, oh, you know, like, that's a good point. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, you and I are kind of the same way about the whole political thing and our fearless leader, and,
I won't even talk about it.
Yeah, she won't even talk about it.
Seeing a picture of him makes my insides go weird. It's like I can't even process that that's what happened. I won't even say the words. that,
yeah,
you know, that it's just, it's,
yeah. So, so I can definitely, you know, I'm with you on the getting angry. And it's funny because there's, I don't know if you watch Orange is the New Black, but
I do.
There's a line, there's a scene in season two, spoiler alert for anybody who's not watched it. There's a scene in season two where they're flying on a plane. It's a bunch of inmates flying on a plane, and they bring male inmates onto the plane. They're all going, I think, to Chicago or something. And
no, they ended up in Chicago, but nobody knew that.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, I think we're in the Midwest. And they're like, well, how do you know it's down there? And one of the guys says, oh, just a bunch of white people who don't vote in their own best interest. And what I think of whenever I see, you know, the stuff online about supporting Trump and, you know, all these different, like, the xenophobic stuff and, you know, against, you know, refugees or against the caravan or all this stuff. And, you know, the all the economic stuff that he's doing. All I think of is, you know, well, a bunch of people that voted against their best interest. You know, you hear about the, all the medical, you know, like Medicare and the, all the healthcare stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what,
well,
that's what drives me nuts.
I think that the big thing that I took away once I, you know, looked at this, like, with a level head was that, you know, an interesting thing a lot of people try to ignore is that a lot of the people who voted for him, Bernie Sanders supporters. And the reason why, part of it, is because he spoke to the same people, the Midwest.
Yeah.
And the people in rural countries, like, nobody else did that but those two. Their messages were different, but when, you know, they pushed Hillary through and it made a lot of people upset, whatever. I mean, Bernie was kind of anti-establishment in the same way Trump is. So I think, you know, my takeaway now is just kind of these people weren't, they didn't, it's not that they were voting against their best interest. I think that they just didn't want to keep doing the same thing where they're ignored. At least if they voted for somebody who was listening to them, it was like their lesser of two evils. And, you know, I'm probably going to get like a bunch of hate mail now. Like, how could you stand up for what they did? But like, it's like, you know, you just have to think about it that way. And so for me, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I understand what you're saying with that, and I get it. And for me, because I was a Bernie supporter, but when Hillary got in there, I'm sorry we took over the, with the
can
political.
Can we stop with this politics? I'm
sorry. Sorry, honey. You know what, Aubrey, you and I will talk about politics after the show.
Yeah. But basically, I mean, basically it's just
here.
The divisiveness is also, this is something interesting though. Like, so, you know, I kind of got away from the refugee stuff because I decided, I had to make that decision that I will never be able to mentally handle that. It's just too much for me. So I was like, all right, what am I going to do? So I started volunteering at International Bipolar Foundation because it just, I saw an ad and I was like, oh, okay. I was, you know, down and out and feeling terrible. So I started volunteering there. And I don't really need to get into all of that, but essentially that's what made me decide to come forward about having bipolar. But what I noticed is there's such a device, like this divisiveness in the bipolar community too, where I get bullied by other people with bipolar more than I ever have from people without bipolar. And so when I started this, I had no intentions of becoming like an advocate. I didn't even really get what that was. Like, you know, I was kind of like, oh, how do people do this? Or what I really did was when I was working, I was meeting these incredible people in a professional setting. But I kind of wanted to know more about them casually because I don't have any, at the time, I didn't have any friends like in face-to-face that had bipolar that I knew of. So I started my own Twitter account, which was kind of with the purpose of meeting people to maybe use for work at International Bipolar Foundation, like, oh, I love your story. You want to blog for us? But also more so I could just talk about myself and meet people. And what ended up happening was, you know, people would start kind of bullying me about stuff. Like, you know, oh, you said I am bipolar. I can't even, and I had somebody say this to me, I can't even listen to what you said, the rest of the thing, because once I heard you say I am bipolar, I realized you're stigmatizing yourself in the community, and this is horrendous. And I thought, okay, well, that's kind of a strong reaction.
Like, yeah, really.
But I just went, and I see it all the time on at work, like on our social media. People will comment in the comments, like, I couldn't read this because you didn't use the proper terminology. And it kind of just lit a fire into my butt to kind of be an advocate for people with bipolar, to just be yourself. Like, there's no right way to be bipolar. I think, yes, we all need to be respectful and try to use the best language. But guess what? If you're somebody in, like, Kenya, which I deal with people in Kenya all the time, they're still working on getting the word crazy not to be used, like, common reference to bipolar, you know,
yeah,
like
to refer to somebody.
Right.
Yeah, they don't have time to be arguing about I am bipolar, I have bipolar, because they're still trying to get people to stop saying, oh, bipolar, you're crazy. And like commit suicide. I've never, and I'm gonna get in trouble for saying all of this, but like I feel like I always say, I'm like, you know what, just be honest, because there are people out there who need to hear it, so they know they're not wrong. I never knew that commit suicide was a bad phrase until probably a couple months into working at IVPF, and somebody said, hey, by the way, it's not appropriate. And I went, oh, okay. Like, all right. But, you know, people get angry at other people for not knowing. And I just feel like, hey, guys, maybe instead of screaming at people that they're stigmatizing the community, you say, oh, interesting. Did you know commit suicide is actually blah, 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 blah? Hey, maybe try not to use that.
Right.
And then give them time to grow. Like, for me, some people are like, oh, well, you know, you work at a professional place with bipolar and da-da-da. Okay, but I still need to grow. I'm still practicing saying I have bipolar. I'm still practicing saying die by suicide. And it's not going to be perfect because it's not natural to me. I'm learning it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I completely understand that, because, you know, growing up, and, you know, Beck and I are we're older, you know, so we come from a generation that handled this particular topic way differently than
very poorly.
Very poorly. Yeah. You know, and so phrases like commit suicide, I can't think of any other ones right now, but, you know, that stuff was just ingrained in us. And it's no different than, you know, you think back to our grandparents that, you know, maybe they used racial slurs, and you're like, you know, grandpa, you can't say that, you know, and they're like, well, why not? It's rah, 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 you know, but that's the case.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it's a different generation, and, you know, they need to grow and learn as well. And so it's a learning curve, and especially now, because easily within the last 10 years, there have been strides on education with, you know, mental health and there are people, especially like our age, that are desperately trying to catch up.
Yeah.
I remember I was volunteering for a text line,
crisis text line.
And they actually wanted us to use the term suicided instead of commit suicide.
Then?
And
or did they make
no,
the word?
And I think they made it up.
Yeah.
No offense to them. They do amazing work. I would suggest to anybody that is struggling to reach out to them. It's 741-741 if you text it. But at the same time, I thought it was kind of ridiculous to come back at me with this suicided thing. I've never heard of that anywhere at any time. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I think I'm just going to stick with what I got going on over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really quick, because we're so far into the show already, Aubrey, we're going to take a quick break, but we definitely want to stay on this topic when we come back.
Okay.
We're going to be listening to an a cappella cover of Katy Perry's Rise.
I won't just survive. Oh, you will see me thrive. Can write my story
Hey, welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe, she's Rebecca, and if you're just tuning in, we are currently having a spirited discussion with our friend and advocate. I couldn't say the word advocate.
Spirited? Does that mean we're all drunk?
No, it doesn't mean we're all drunk. Although it's not, you know.
It's not that far out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. Just we're very, it's a very lively conversation.
Okay.
With the wonderful and lovely Aubrey Good.
Hello again.
Hi, lady. So.
So we decided that we're going to switch gears and try to get back to our questions that we were planning to ask you.
Yes.
So I've read some of your story and the information that you sent over to me, and I remember that you had said that early on you were diagnosed incorrectly. What was that like? What was the diagnosis?
I was diagnosed with depression. And so this is like a funny story in retrospect. It's really not funny, so I apologize for laughing. but basically my dad had just gotten arrested. That's not the funny part. But he got arrested and I was depressed, because my dad is not with us anymore. And they kind of misunderstood that to me having clinical depression, whereas, you know, in retrospect, it's like that's a situational, like anybody would be depressed in that situation.
Right.
And that's why I just kind of giggle, because I'm like, how could you miss that? But so what they did then was put me on an antidepressant, and it was actually, I think, my pediatrician who was like, oh, it's depression. And then we had it backed up by a psychiatrist later. But, you know, if somebody says, oh, like, this is my diagnosis and it looks right, they're going to kind of agree. Like, nobody nobody was like, oh, she's lighting him on fire, like doing anything really erratic. You know, she's mm-hmm. depressed. So they confirmed it. And then for years, I was arguing that I didn't feel right, that I couldn't feel like any emotion unless I did something erratic. Like I had to just, I had to push the envelope, and like everything had to be very extreme for me to get like a rush of emotions. And that was probably so like from 13 to about 17. And they just said, oh, you're not taking your medication. They kept upping the dosage, and my symptoms just got so bad. And I went from being a straight A, like quiet, I was very shy once upon a time, to just like wild child, and didn't even care. I mean, I was just blatantly wild. I didn't hide it. I was in private school. I would show up with vodka in my water bottle. I was getting in trouble all the time. I was in detention like every day, which only fueled it more because I was like, oh, let's see how long we get this going, you know? And they were like, oh, all right, you're done. So I did get disciplinary action, and they asked me to leave. In Catholic school, you know, they don't really just expel you. That would tarnish their name. Yeah, they kind of did like a, oh, come to discipline summer school or you can't come back. And I was like, whatever, like, see ya, you know, like my little punk ass. But I got off because I was doing something stupid and got in trouble. And then the social worker was like, sometimes I got bipolar. Like, I think she just was associating the way I was acting with the medication. I was on Zoloft, an antidepressant. And she was like, well, you know, people with bipolar disorder, antidepressants can make them manic. And then nothing happened with it for a while because I was at that point old enough to kind of make decisions about my mental health. And I was like, this is, you know, this isn't right. Like, I didn't really understand what bipolar was, you know, like, if, you know, now I'm so aware, it's hard to imagine a time where I was like, what is that? But I just, you know, I didn't think, because I didn't know anybody who had bipolar at the time and was functional. Everything I heard was that you were in like the hospital or, you know, I had an uncle, my great uncle, who I think he was maybe schizoaffective, maybe it was schizophrenia, I can't remember. And so he was in jail all the time, and he was in and out, and he just had such a chaotic life, and that's what I associated with mental illness. And I just thought, there's no way I'm able to, you know, go to work and go to school and have a boyfriend and I have friends. So it was kind of, some people remember it vividly. I just remember being like, no, I'm not crazy. I'm just a little messed up. Is that a song lyric? I think that is a song lyric.
Yeah, Matchbox 20. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. Oh my God. It took me a minute to, I'm like, what?
My favorite line is from Steel Magnolias, and when she says, I'm not crazy. I've just been in a very bad mood for 40 years. That's kind of my mantra.
Yeah.
So that was a misdiagnosis. And, you know, it's a common one, I think. Oh, well, because I think I have bling and then bipolar 2. So I think that's really common with bipolar 2, is the hospitalization, the depression misdiagnosis.
So was that, because you said that you had, you know, just a couple of years ago, had talked with your husband about going and getting, you know, properly treated and stuff. Was that when you finally got the bipolar 2 diagnosis, or was it before that?
No. So I was 18, and I can't remember what was really going on in my life. The other problem was that I was kind of in a haze because I really drank a lot and things like that. So I just remember I was 18. I was out of high school, and maybe I was closer to 19, but anyway, my grandmother was like always very concerned about me because my behavior was just so terrible. And then it wouldn't be. Then all of a sudden I'd be working 40 hours a week or 60 hours a week, and I'd be financially stable, and I'd be, you know, doing things. So, you know, I kind of would like flip the switch, and, but I was very apathetic all the time. And so she sat me down with my grandfather and was just like, you know, I'm very worried about you. You know, mental illness runs in the family, and I just don't want to see you go the way that other people have, like her brother, my uncle, and lived just a hard life because I don't have to, because I did have treatment available and I did have people who were supportive. So we had a really long conversation, and after that, I agreed to go to a psychiatrist, and I got reevaluated, and I got diagnosed with rapid cycling bipolar. But the issue was that I had drug-induced mania. So at the time, he didn't really say, like, two or one. It was just drug-induced mania, because I guess mania from your antidepressant or drugs or alcohol is not necessarily, like, true mania. So he just said rapid cycling. And then it was when I went back at 24 that they solidified, no, this is bipolar 2.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually just found out myself that I'm bipolar 2. I've always known I was bipolar, but I think there's always some sort of discussion between whichever doctor I was seeing as to whether or not it was 1 or 2. And my new doctor, well, she's not that new anymore, but I found
the current doctor.
Yeah, the current doctor. I found this fantastic doctor. And, you know, she'll break it down and tell me the truth. And she has this way about her where, you know, she could go, you know, shut up, you're a serial killer, and you'd still be like, oh, okay.
Thanks for clarifying
that.
Yeah,
she just has this way about her. It's so comforting and everything.
Yeah, she's very compassionate.
So I found out from her that I've got bipolar 2 for sure.
Yeah.
So what I was told, like, because my doctor, I asked, I was like, am I 1 or 2? And he honestly just said, you know, it doesn't really matter, because it can change. Like, in 10 years, I could have a manic episode and get hospitalized, and that would put me as technically bipolar 1. So he was like, he told me, and this was his opinion, that just treating the rapid cycling is more important than trying to focus on, you know, am I 1 or 2? Because at the end of the day, bipolar differently than all of us. So, like, my mania might look differently than somebody else, and they're just going to be treating your individual symptoms and mood states anyway. So I don't get too hung up on it, but yeah, I definitely have more depression. Like, I'm definitely depressed way more. And the problem with the hypomania is that it looks like my normal personality. I'm very type A, and I'm very, like, neurotic in general. Like, and that's a trait that's within my family. So I can tell that it's not just the bipolar.
Right.
So, like, John has no idea if I'm hypomanic. I have to tell him, because he's just like, I just think you're always great. I'm like, thanks, hon, but, you know, but I'm hypomanic, actually, you know.
Yeah.
But he can pick up the depression, because that's something obvious. Like, if I'm all of a sudden unproductive, he's like, oh, something's wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
What do you think is the most important key to achieving a happy marriage when one person is sick?
Oh, honesty, like honesty. The first couple years, I wasn't in therapy. I wasn't treated at all. And like every time I got in a fight, I'm like, this is divorce. You know, like I just asked you to take the trash out. And I'm like, divorce. and I couldn't. Yeah. Yeah, just a little bit. But, you know, I couldn't handle the distance all the time. And I had because when I moved here, you know, I was 21, we got married. I moved across the country just to California. And I had no friends, no family, and he left right away. So, like, I was by myself. So I remember my best friend came out to visit me with his boyfriend, and he found me, and I was eating like peanut butter and jelly and ramen noodles. And all I had in my house was a mattress and like a little TV stand and a laptop. And it like, he was just like, are you okay? Like, you know, I just, like, crawled out like Gollum from my apartment. I'm like, hello. So
my precious.
Yeah. Holding my peanut butter and jelly. So,
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, after I admitted I needed treatment, first it was kind of embarrassing, but it started to affect like my libido and stuff, the lithium. So it just came down to, I had to be just super honest, like, hey, I'm not feeling great right now, or, you know, I'm feeling a little depressed, or I need this support from you, or I just need you to not talk to me right now, or, you know, and we've done group therapy, or not group therapy, couples counseling, and the therapist focused on the bipolar, so she, like, walked me through what it is, the symptoms, and together we picked out what are my triggers, what does he pick up on, what do I need to tell him, so that it's not so much of a guessing game, you know, because I used to get mad and be like, how could you not know I was hypomanic? And he'd be like, I don't know, because you didn't, I don't know what that means.
Right.
So that's what I think. I mean, just in general, I'm trying to be a very honest person, so just in general, like, I'm pretty blunt, but I think okay. It's come along.
Yeah.
I think it's been a long way for our marriage and my friendships too, because some of my friends wouldn't understand, like, all of a sudden you don't come around for 6 months, what's going on? And, you know, my best friends now know if I'm like, hey, I'm not feeling well, if you say mental or physical, you know, like, and I don't really have to go into explanations, which is nice. Like, people let me tell them, you know, John and my friends, they let me tell them when I'm not doing well. And I think if it was severe enough, they would be able to pick up on it otherwise.
Sometimes so, that's hard, though. I have a difficult time occasionally expressing to Joe that things aren't going very well for me. And then
right. He'll
actually end up picking up on it anyway. Yeah, I don't think it matters what level of it that I'm at. If I'm on, like, first stages, it's just kind of droopy depression, I think he knows immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the only one who's ever been able to tell me, you know what, I think you're manic right now.
Yeah.
And as I'm, like, climbing the wall and hanging, dangling upside down from the ceiling,
yeah.
What do you mean? I'm not manic.
Well, yeah, I think for my support, I'm a difficult case because I am, I think, kind of eccentric, like, not manic. I mean, we were just talking about my London trip, and I was like, I have to wear a crown in front of Buckingham Palace. And, like, some people might be like, oh, it's grandiosity. Are you manic? And I'm like, no, that's just me.
Yeah.
You know. So sometimes, you know, I think with, you know, spouses, they know you so well. They know, you know, what your quirks are and what. Because the hardest thing, I think, is to admit you're bipolar. And then have people coming to you and trying to guess, like, well, was this action bipolar disorder? Was this action bipolar disorder? And you're like, you know, because then it starts to feel like I drove myself crazy when I first started to take care of myself because I was trying to figure out, like, what's my personality and what's not. And my therapist was like, you need to just chill out and just accept that it's all one and the same. And if you're just feeling more extreme than normal, that's probably your bipolar, you know, like, because it accentuates your own, at least in my case, like, I don't get, like, a new personality if I'm having bipolar states. It just accentuates my feelings and my actions that I already have.
Right.
So, you know, maybe if, like, I was at Buckingham Palace and my little crown and, like, flipping a finger at, like, the queen, that might be an indication that something's wrong, you know. But
yeah.
Me being there
in the crown
was not the, yeah, it was not.
Yeah.
So
you goofing around having a good time.
God save the queen.
Exactly. No, and I get that, you know, and some folks just naturally are exuberant in that way, you know, and I think that's awesome, you know, embrace it, you know.
I'm not someone who drinks coffee. or energy drinks or anything like that. And there's so many people. It's insane the amount of people that come out of, especially when October hits, come out of the woodwork about the coffee that they drink and everything, and how it helps them become a people person and helps them go through all these different things that they're going through in their life. And so I don't have that advantage, you know, that most people have, where they can drink all the coffee they want and just, you know, run around like a mad person. But
yeah.
I'm the total opposite.
Yeah, she not a coffee fan and gets mad at me if I.
It's coffee breath is almost worse than beer breath.
As I sip my coffee. Whoa.
Yep. We're getting down to the wire, which really sucks because we had a conversation with you, Aubrey. So we're gonna ask the I guess important stuff so that way
okay.
we can get through it really quick. What is your social media? Where can people contact you about stuff?
They can contact me on my Twitter, which is at Aubrey, AUBREY, M, Good, GOD. I ask that people don't contact me on my personal Facebook or Instagram. I mean, I tried originally to, like, make it more mental health-oriented, but with me
mm-hmm.
working full-time at, you know, in bipolar and then having bipolar – and then having a Twitter account with all mental health, I just needed, like, my Facebook. Like, you guys are my Facebook, which is totally fine. But I needed that space to, like, be me. Like, I don't really – you guys know. I don't really talk about my mental health on my Facebook because,
yeah.
realistically, I don't really talk about it that often. So I just asked.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, I don't mean to interrupt. But, you know, that's the thing is, you know, it's realizing that there has to be – you know, your whole life isn't bipolar. It isn't mental health. You know, you have a husband, you have a life, you know, there are other things besides that, you know, and you need to be able to express that as well.
Right. And I just can't have, I mean, like, so you guys, I talk to you all the time, but like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was getting an influx of friend requests and I was thinking, I don't really know this person other than like the mental health chats we have on Twitter, and I just can't open up like my family and friends to posting stuff, and then people will be like, like, what did you say, you know, like, so
right.
it's kind of protecting
exactly.
them as well, because it's like Facebook's a little more intimate for me because I don't have a mental health page. I don't think I could with like all the IBPF stuff too, but anyway, so my Twitter is open to everybody and we can have fun chats there.
Awesome.
And do you have a blog?
I don't actually. It's so funny.
Okay.
A lot of people think they don't get like who I am. Like I just popped up out of nowhere and they're like, oh, you're a blogger. And I'm like, no, I mean, I've written a couple for IBPF, but I'm like, no, I don't blog. I'm just here.
Okay. I won't hold it against you.
I'm gonna.
No. Yeah. I write sometimes. I get a mental block that kind of like, it's a long story. It's like 8 years of writer's block.
I get it. Believe me.
Yeah.
I go through these spurts where I'm like, I can write everything. I understand all of the world. Let me write about it.
The universe is open to me.
And then the next day I'm like, what were words?
Yeah. I can just think good.
Yeah.
We, you know what? Let's save some of the questions. Aubrey's part of our panel thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to save a couple of these questions that we wanted to ask you for the panel thing then. Because they're actually kind of universal questions that I think everybody could chime in on.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
yeah.
Just looking at what we've got left, because we actually have a few questions left, but we're literally almost out of time.
Yeah. So we're going to try to go 2 hours on that Saturday, the December 15th, that we're doing the panel. The last time we did it, we did 2 hours, and it seemed like that was just enough time for everybody to get their message out.
Yeah. So
yeah.
we're going to
get that. Well, that's exciting. That's exciting, because I think, like, people answering the same questions, I love being able to show, like, we're all different. Like, we all have our mental health or mental illness, but, like, we are different. So, you know, the panel will be great because there will be all of us talking about our different thoughts and same thing, and you can see the diversity in it, you know.
Yeah.
Like me, I'm kind of somebody, this, I think it's a compliment, I don't know, somebody's like, you're kind of a rebel advocate, and I was like, I don't know what that means, but thank you. but they were saying, because, like, I'm just on there, like, having a good time, I'm, like, you know, pretty blunt, and I was also, you know, in the military, and then I'm from Philly, like, the suburbs of Philly, so, like, I have no filter sometimes, so I just kind of say things, and I'm like, okay, hope nobody gets mad, but, But, you know, when I was in London, I remember I was talking to Becca about this. Like, I deleted my Twitter, actually, because I felt like people, like, I just couldn't be myself on Twitter because I feel like everybody wants to, like, craft a really cool message. They could retweet a million times and quote, and I'm just like, today I'm anxious. All right. Like, talk about my feelings on things. Like, oh, hey, guys. It's okay to be different, and everybody's like, wah! So I ended up bringing it back, so, because people were trying to find me on Facebook, and I'm like, nah. But,
yeah.
But I'm glad, since I came back, I'm a little bit more honest about myself, so it's felt more authentic.
Well, that's good. I think it's a good place for us to wrap at, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we're going to run out of time on the interwebs.
Yep.
Aubrey, hang on the line. We're going to finish out the show with Beautiful by David Hernandez.
We'll see you guys next week.
And we will see you guys next week for Thanksgiving weekend. Woo-hoo!
Father in the sky, and they started to align. I see you passing by, and we're slowing down the sky. Now my love is flashing by. All I see is flashing lights, because you're right here by my side. Come alive. If this were a love song, would you be mine? I just can't get you off of my mind. And I think about you all day and night. So I wrote you a love song, wrote you a love song. Baby, you're beautiful. I think you're beautiful.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.